Investigative journalist Sarah Posner has been writing extensively on the relationship between conservative Christian leaders and national political candidates, and she's been doing that for a long time. And the current election cycle just begs for that kind of expertise. So I'm very happy to be able to welcome Sarah back to State of Belief once again. Sarah, thanks for being with us once more.
Thank you for having me again, Welton.
Let's start with Donald Trump. He can't keep up with the likes of Ted Cruz in terms of conservative Christian credentials. But you've written, most recently in Rolling Stone magazine as well as in the New York Times, about his popularity with those voters. Would you talk about that, please? I don't understand it.
This week, he got a very coveted endorsement from Jerry Falwell Jr., the son of the Moral Majority founder and the president of Liberty University. Now, of course, Falwell doesn't represent all evangelicals. Let's just put that on the table right now. Mm-hmm. But it does signal that there are a significant number of evangelicals who are supporting Trump, and polling data bears that out. It bears it out in Iowa, bears it out in South Carolina, national polling data bears it out as well. And the only explanation that I can come up with for why, despite being not religious and in many ways thumbing his nose at the concerns of religious conservatives, Trump has managed to draw their attention because they're perhaps more interested in making America great, quote unquote, than mm-hmm. they are in making America Christian, which has long been their goal.
Mm-hmm. Do you think any of these could go sour on him rather than helpful, the endorsements he's received?
Well, as much as he has support of white evangelicals, I think that there are a great many evangelicals who are quite disgusted with the evangelical embrace of Trump. It remains to be seen whether those people are going to outnumber the pro-Trump evangelicals. Mm-hmm. I think you would have to see a consolidation of them around one particular alternative in most likely Rubio or Cruz for them to defeat Trump, I think. I mean, if the polling data continues to go in the direction that it's going.
Mm. What happened to Mike Huckabee? So much of this normally would be right in his wheelhouse, but he finds himself totally marginalized this year.
I think evangelicals are looking for, and I hate to use this word, a winner, not a loser, right? Mm-hmm. Mike Huckabee was once ran. So is Rick Santorum. They're the two people who won the Iowa caucuses in 2008 and 2012. And it appears that evangelicals are not interested in seeing them run again. Mm-hmm. So their history, and no matter how much they appeal to the religious sensibilities of Iowa evangelicals, they're getting nowhere. I think Iowa evangelicals want to see a new face. Now, whether that face turns out to be Trump or Cruz or less likely Rubio remains to be seen, but it's very clear that they want something new. And Iowa's going to come down to a battle between the sort of Christian nationalists, dominionists who support Ted Cruz, and the supporters of Trump who are basically looking for that, you know, take no prisoners, I'm the winner, I'm going to send all the immigrants back to Mexico, and I'm going to be different than Barack Obama and keep the Muslims out, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to come down to a battle between those two camps.
Are they just saying religion doesn't matter, or are they saying that we are in a situation in which change politically is more important than religious concerns?
I think that we're in a stage where the religious right has been told by their leaders for so many years that we need a revival, we need Christian leaders, we need great Christian leaders in government, we need elected officials in government who are going to govern from their biblical values. They've mm-hmm. been hearing that over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And when do they ever actually see that happen? I mean, sure, they have Christian leaders in government, or what they would consider to be Christian leaders in government, mm-hmm. but then they got the same-sex marriage decision, which has really thrown them through a loop. Mm-hmm. They haven't yet been able to criminalize abortion. There still is a legally speaking, a separation of church and state.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they're thinking, all this talk about biblical values and governing from a biblical worldview hasn't really worked out for us. So we want to go with a winner. We want to go with somebody who just sort of basically understands at a gut level that America is under threat by quote-unquote enemies,
mm-hmm.
and that person doesn't have to specify those enemies as being secularists or feminists. He exhibits that in his behavior towards women, his behavior towards Megyn Kelly even,
mm-hmm.
his discussion of Muslims being a threat to America.
Mm-hmm.
So he taps into those anxieties without using the religion, and since these voters have not really seen the entanglement of religion and politics work out so well for them, maybe they're willing to just go for that.
Hmm. Sarah, you recently wrote about the way the Democratic candidates have addressed or avoided talking about faith. There was a striking exchange with Hillary Clinton where you say she missed a great opportunity. Talk about that for a second.
Well, she was asked by a voter at a campaign stop in Iowa how her views lined up with the Ten Commandments. And this voter wanted a way of being able to tell her conservative Christian Republican friends why she was voting for Clinton. She wanted to be able to justify that to her Republican friends. And Secretary Clinton gave an extended soliloquy about her Methodist faith and what that means to her, which I suppose answered this voter's question.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, when I wrote about this, there was a lot to admire about what she said. She talked about, you know, Christianity being wrongly used to judge people and the sorts of ways that she views her own Christianity in a less judgmental light.
Mm-hmm.
But she did not say anything about, well, we do not have religious tests for presidents under the Constitution, and we have separation of church and state under the Constitution, so I'm not going to govern from a particular religious viewpoint because that's not constitutional. And, you know, you shouldn't create these religious tests for the presidency because that's also not constitutional, even while I can still hold these very intense religious beliefs that guide me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think those things are not all incompatible with each other, but she just did not address the constitutional question.
I understand.
And I understand why she didn't.
Yeah. What about Bernie Sanders? A lot of analysts are saying his secularism is actually more historically significant in a modern-day candidate than even his Jewish heritage is. What about him?
Well, I don't think that most Bernie Sanders supporters are looking for him to talk about religion. He did talk about religion, interestingly enough, when he spoke at Liberty University, something Hillary Clinton hasn't done. And he was basically saying, look, you know, you people, you evangelicals, you read the Bible, and in the Bible there's a lot of stuff that supports my positions on economic issues. It was sort of an interesting take, given that he's a secular person.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't shy there about talking about his support for a woman's right to choose. And I think it's interesting that people are kind of fixated on his secularism, but not on Donald Trump's secularism, because
mm-hmm.
Donald Trump really is. I mean, he likes to say that he's a Presbyterian, and he likes to say that he loves the evangelicals. But really, the entirety of his adult life has been extremely secular.
Mm-hmm. Sarah Posner is a prolific journalist covering religion and politics, and I really encourage you to follow her at sarahposner.com. Sarah is also the author of the book God's Prophets, Profits, Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values Voters. Sarah, thanks so much for being with us once again on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Wilton, for having me again.
Now, before we go, I want to share with you something good, something positive. For the last several weeks, news that makes us feel good or current events that evoke gratitude have been in critically short supply. The threats of terrorism and candidates for the presidency of our nation acting like pouting grade school students or bullies who must get their way or not play. So I've been thinking a lot about the decision on Planned Parenthood handed down earlier this week by a Houston grand jury. Ever since a highly troubling and equally questionable film was released, ostensibly documenting charges that Planned Parenthood had been harvesting and selling body parts of fetuses, hardly a day has gone by that we've not heard bitter denunciations of that organization several times during the day. Thankfully, even under siege, Planned Parenthood has continued its irreplaceable offering of health care for women who otherwise actually just wouldn't have health care. My friend Cecile Richards, leader of Planned Parenthood, was called before a congressional hearing and hounded by unfounded accusations about the agency's work. Numerous members of Congress have called for defunding Planned Parenthood. The organization and its supporters have been called all kinds of bad names and labeled immoral. Now remember, all of this took place prior to any report based on a serious investigation about the charges or the credibility of the incendiary film. Well, earlier this week, as you may know, Devon Anderson, the district attorney in Harris County, Texas, announced that after an investigation of the charges leveled at Planned Parenthood by the producers of the scurrilous film that was supposed to provide evidence of criminal activity, after an investigation, there were no laws broken by Planned Parenthood, and the film was a fake, a collection of clips carefully spliced together to turn truth into a lie. Instead of indicting Planned Parenthood because of the film, the producers of the film were indicted for a felony, fraud, and more. Now, finally, something went right, I thought. The justice system worked. Compassionate medical care was affirmed and lies that hurt and kill people were challenged. Appropriately, final decisions about the guilt, criminal activity, and charges in this case will be made in the courts. The blanket of lies spread across our nation have been exposed for what they were, though many individuals in high places will conveniently ignore the findings of the grand jury. Sadly, the power of untruth and its consequences remain. We cannot bring back the lives of innocent people killed by a man inflamed with anger resulting from the lies perpetuated even in the halls of our government. Prejudice prompts violence. Hate speech kills as it incites sick minds to justify murder. Yes, we already know that truth appears not to matter among people who thrive on hatred. That's an ongoing problem with no good consequences. But friends, it is nice, it is encouraging, it is inspiring to see truth win out over lies. Something good to happen when so many people wanted things to go badly, and justice in our nation to prevail, even though the causes of justice and truth will continue to need all of the support that we can offer. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to say a sincere thank you. If you've heard something on this week's show that you think would be helpful to someone you know, please share it with that person. Direct them to stateofbelief.com, where they'll find full episodes, an in-depth archive, extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned in the show. The community that has grown around State of Belief Radio is active all week long online, too. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and engage in the discussion. We'd love to hear from you. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance, Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. It's getting crowded there. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what he was.